here. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and it has been a bit of a week, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
You can say that again.
With me today is Becky. How are you, Becky?
I'm great.
And Dan, how are you doing?
Winded.
Winded. How is the school season going for you?
It's all just wrapping up.
Oh, cool. So we've got a very interesting show for you today. We're talking about a subject that I find really, really fun. They're called, was it Breatharians?
Breatharians? Breatharians?
Not sure. They're as if a vegetarian eats vegetables, and a breatharian, I guess, would be considered to eat breath.
Yeah, it's sort of the logical conclusion of an argument that I've made in the future that vegetarians aren't not killing. They're just not killing things that they relate to very well. But the idea of the breatharian or breatharian is that you're not killing anything at all. You're just sort of absorbing sunlight and water and something that they call sort of anomalously light that has maybe some sort of
I'm just interested that you made an argument in the future, Dan.
I was wondering about that. You said you made an argument in the future.
I think
you need to substantiate this claim.
Boy, I can't do that. I think I did mean in the past.
What are you, a time lord? Yeah.
Time is wibbly wobbly timey wimey to Dan Lombardo, our resident science talker.
Oh boy.
I have no comment on the topic of time.
So we're getting down to the wire. If you like Ask an Atheist and you want to help us out, Friday, June 21st, we'll be at Louis G's at 5219 Pacific Highway East in Fife. It is, instead of our usual comedy thing, it is music. So it should be a different time, a lot of fun. Louis G's has really good food. It's an all-ages venue. And we'll have 4X, Animals and Cars, Variety Hour, Sleepy Pilot, and Body Box featuring Nick Kennedy, who's been on the show. So it's $10 at the door or at Brown Paper Tickets. Again, Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m.
School should be out, so, you know, you can come on, have a good time, and, you know, we should be all done with finals, graduation, all stuff like that.
So if you'd like to talk about breatharianism or breatharianism, give us a call, 253-584-1480. You can tell us how to pronounce it if you're a breatharian, but let us know, but you might be dead. I don't know. So we've got a news story. This is Congress rejects humanist chaplains. The House Armed Forces Committee rejected 4318, an amendment proposed by Representative Robert Andrews, Democrat, New Jersey, to add atheists, humanists, and ethical culturalists to the chaplains corps to provide guidance and counsel to service members. Objections included the claim that these chaplains would tell grieving family members their soldier children are worm food, and would tell dying soldiers, if you die here, there's no hope for you in the future. Representative Adam Smith, a self-identified Christian congressman hailing from Washington State, rebutted that to say that an atheist or a humanist doesn't believe anything to say that an atheist or a humanist doesn't believe anything is ignorant. He noted that atheists believe in a system of values that is worth as much to them as Christianity means to Christians.
So, indeed.
Thank you very much, Representative Adam Smith. Sorry I mangled that, but...
Yeah, it was really incredible hearing some of the outcry from congressional representatives saying that, oh, my goodness, if you have atheist chaplains, then, you know, we usually send chaplains to go inform people that their loved ones have died, and so we can't possibly send an atheist to go make a really terrible, advisement that, oh, your loved one has perished. I mean, do we have that same kind of requirement for police officers? Are police officers not allowed to go and inform someone that their loved one has been killed horribly in an accident just because they're atheist? Do we have an atheist test for that? And do we ever doubt that an atheist or a humanist police officer would be able, or a doctor for that matter, would be able to make that kind of thing? I think people that are informing families would have the sensitivity to not say, oh yeah, by the way, sorry about your kid, he's just worm food now.
Yeah,
let's say if you'd use the phrase worm food in any sort of speech on consolation, you have no business being either a police officer or a chaplain.
Right. I would go farther to say that if you think that's how atheists are going to act, you have no business being in Congress. I mean, it's ridiculous to think that just because we're atheists, we'll have no concept of the idea of tact. Mm. And we'll have no concept of the idea of how to console people. There are lots of ways to console people who are, you know, who are secular or from a secular basis. Psychology is full of them. I mean,
and physics.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say physics. Sorry.
To some, it can be consoling.
To some, but I would call that a very small population.
Well, that saddens me.
Dan,
now
Dan,
I need consoling.
I'm going to send a physicist to your, yeah, your deathbed, Dan.
Thank you. Not a quantum physicist, though. Those guys are weird.
See, okay, but yeah, okay. I think my point has been made for me. You know, when you become a chaplain, as the atheistic and humanistic chaplains we've had on the show can tell you, there's a lot of training involved,
right.
And it doesn't. And the training isn't you're going to be worm food when you die. I mean, we do have to stare in the face that we don't believe in an afterlife. There is that.
Sure.
And
yeah.
I, you know, that is something that we talk about, but we don't just state it bluntly when you're dying. We state it bluntly to Christians when they want to tell us that we're going to go sing hosannas to their really boring God in the future. this is to me the political problem is people don't know when the fight ends anymore. Well, I don't know, ever, really. I mean, if you look at American history, this was also true in the 19th century and the 18th century, where people who think mostly political think that politics happens all the time. Like, the political tack that I take with some Christians when we talk about religion in, you know, in the workplace, in government, I'm a combatant, I'm a political combatant, I'm going to use all of my rhetorical skills, I'm going to do everything I can to get my point across.
Right.
But when I'm in the hospice tending to my dying friend or my dying family members, I'm not a political combatant. And that's me. And it tells me that these folks here, they might not do the same thing. Well, of course they don't do the same thing. They come into the hospital and they sell you, they give you the hard sell. Either convert now or you'll burn forever. And I would say that we're nicer than that.
I can't imagine anything more scary and horrifying than having someone come in and tell me in a field hospital, you know, there's this very dramatic scene. You're dying in a field hospital and you're going to tell them that that the only thing that you can do is saying that there's nothing for you after this. There's no hope for you in the future. There would be nothing more terrifying than for someone to come in and say, oh, it's okay because you're going to be with Jesus, unless that is you don't actually believe in Jesus and haven't accepted Jesus, in which case you're going to burn in eternity. I can't see how that is consoling by any means.
Yeah, that doesn't particularly seem consoling or comforting to me either. Basically being sort of forced at your weakest moment to try and, you know, make some sort of decision or do some sort of processing when, you know, the nature of your injury may have psychological or neurological ramifications as well. You're not at the top of your game.
Right. It's a weird time. This is the problem for me. I said this before, is for me, there's a time and place to talk about atheism, and there's a time and place to not talk about atheism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like when we're here, there's certain subjects that we don't talk about because we don't think they're germane to the subject. I don't come in here and talk about working 20 meters. I mean, I don't come in here and talk about this thing that I quoted last week. I come in here to talk about, you know, atheism, skepticism, and the separation of church and state. I also know when to be a salesman and when not to be a salesman.
Right.
And that's not these people, I think.
And I think the assumption about the lack of tact in atheists is something that I've come across a lot. You know, when I sort of come out as an atheist to somebody I've known for a while, what they usually say is, well, you're the nicest atheist I've ever met.
Yeah.
And the usual response is, well, how many have you met? How many do you know? Or is what you know about atheists what you see on the news or what your pastor tells you?
They probably met a whole lot of atheists, just they didn't realize that they were meeting one.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So I probably wasn't the nicest.
No, we all have our moments. I mean, religious, not religious, sometimes we're good, sometimes we're not so good. We've got an email, Lisa from Minnesota, and she writes, I've been an atheist since I was very young, and I have some relatives who are young Earth creationists. At family gatherings, I dread topics like evolution coming up. I don't want to argue or debate about facts with these relatives because I found it to be pointless and frustrating. Rather, I want a tactful way to move the conversation along and to keep things from getting awkward or tense. Do you have any tips? I would feel better going to family gatherings if I had a plan in place. My family's a little bit weird, but I do, you know, I've been involved with other families. Well, that's a weird way to put it, but I've been at gatherings of other families where that stuff comes out. And my take on it is, it's good. You didn't make it awkward. They made it awkward.
You know, to try and move the conversation along, you can literally just try and say, yes, and then go with whatever you want beyond that to change the subject.
Yeah, for me, this is an interesting one. It's my father-in-law is actually a minister, and at family gatherings, we used to actually have a great time with sort of the cut and thrust of debate, trying to defeat each other's arguments. And then we realized that while we were enjoying ourselves, that it was making the rest of the family very nervous.
Yeah.
And so we had to sort of avoid doing this because there was the assumption that it would in some fashion lead to a fight where we were really just kind of playing conversational chess.
Well, that's the thing, is if you're other people in your family who might not believe as you do, but also believe that these sorts of topics are not germane to family gatherings because of the division they create, couldn't you get involved with a conspiracy with them that whenever the subject comes up that you guys talk about something else?
Yeah, I guess it's possible. You could do the XKCD thing and play the conspiracies off against each other, too.
Yeah, something like that. And that's just something I came up with right here, so I don't know how effective that would be. But I think, that's the thing, is people don't realize that when they start talking about evolution and stuff like that and how terrible it is, it's not the atheist. This is something we need to change. It's not us who's making it uncomfortable for everybody if we don't say anything. If people come up to us and start talking about evolution and saying how terrible it is, it's not our fault. It really isn't. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back in a moment, we're going to talk about living off air, or not living, as the case may be.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul save the universe.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Rudd.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul save the universe.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Rudd.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Billy! Billy! I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode!
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England, I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And earlier this week, Becky came to me with a really interesting story about weirdness. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about it?
Yeah, this is about 65-year-old Seattle resident Navina Shine. She's completed week 5 now of a self-designed experiment to test her ability to live for several months without ingesting carbon-based food products, or so she says. She's been chronicling her progress via YouTube videos, and she characterizes her odyssey as quasi-scientific and says she believes she neither believes nor disbelieves in the ability to live on light simply because she hasn't tried it out yet. The LOL experiment, or living on light experiment, she really does call it the LOL experiment, symbolically uses the term light to describe some yet unknown nutritional source already embedded within the human mind, body, and spiritual systems that can give us exactly what we need in order to be healthy and well, or so she claims. So, yeah, basically she's a woman. She's gotten significant news coverage in the last week, and it sounds very silly and very funny, but you know, the reality of it is, and I've watched a few of her video, you know, logs, and it's the chronicle of a woman starving herself, and it's shocking. I mean, in one case, it's very funny and it's so obvious, but on the other hand, this is one subject who is permitted to ingest water and tea, and coffee. And she's sticking to a controlled camera-monitored environment, and she's got video footage being continuously recorded, and she's doing these video diaries.
It would be funnier. It sounds funny, and to be honest with you, I laugh about it a bit. And I've been laughing about it for a while because I've heard about breatharianism and breatharians or breatharians or whatever you want to call them. I mean, It has a very interesting history. It seems to come from Hindu mythology about living off of what they call light. Isn't actually light, but it's pranic energy or something like that.
Is this like ki or chi? Is it something along those lines?
I think they're related. You know, as usual, it's another energy force that's never been measured.
You find it in chakras, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. You know, there are other people who don't go from the pranic perspective, but, well, that's fun. but that seems to be where it comes from. My favorite story in breatharianism begins with somebody I read about in the Reverend Iron Stang's High Weirdness by Mail book back in, I think, the early 90s. His name is Wiley Brooks. His introduction to America was an appearance on the TV show That's Incredible in 1980. That's a show probably most famous for, they'd actually played James Heidrick Kung Fu psychic guy as a straight thing, like this is something he could really do, and then he went on that's my line with James Randi, and the whole thing was debunked. This is a show not exactly known for its credulity. He founded the Breatharian Institute of America and described the major elements which prevented him from living without food to be people pollution, food pollution, air pollution, and my favorite, electro pollution.
Electro pollution. Somebody needs to start a band with that name. That's too good.
I bet that's happened. But here's the thing. So he started this institute where he would teach people to live off of light. And then he was discovered. Well, he's allegedly discovered. I don't know if this is actually proven in court. But he was discovered in 1983. Basically, instead of living off food, he would wait till everybody was asleep, sneak off and go to the convenience store and live off food. You know, and it's like I said, it's never been proven, but he says some really weird stuff on his website, like the double quarter pounder with cheese meal from McDonald's possesses a special bass frequency that he recommends it, and he recommends it as a food for beginning breatharians, and that Diet Coke is liquid light.
So when he says bass frequency, is he talking about a low sound vibration or just something at the bottom of something?
I don't. We're just in Deepak Chopra territory. So
can you live off electro pollution's technotronic music? That's what I want to know.
I believe that the double quarter pounder with cheese has more quantum in it. It has more quantums, and I think it has some Higgs boson flavoring on it.
Oh, that's why Nuka-Cola put out the quantum too, right?
I think so. Yeah. And it's just, this is sort of the weird thing. And
was this his way of justifying his late night runs to the convenience store and fast food stores? He's saying, well, Diet Coke and quarter pounders, basically, they're okay because they have less people pollution in them?
I don't know that those charges have been specifically addressed, but, the Institute is still ongoing. You can go to his website and take a look at it right now. I was on it just probably about half an hour ago. And there it is. And this is the kind of stuff they talk about. Now, that's funny. You know, it's a guy who said it's a scam, but it's a funny scam. You can tell people that it's, then you can just sort of laugh about it because the guy was, the guy is obviously a fraud.
But until someone starves to death, it's funny.
Well, here's the thing. There's this lady, Ellen Grieve, otherwise known as Jazz Muheen, and she was a prominent advocate of breatharianism in the 1990s. And I would actually hear about this. She claimed that she could go months and months without having any sort of food, and then when her house was examined, she found it, people found it stocked with food, and she said, oh, that's for just for my husband. She volunteered on TV to be tested, kind of like what we're going to talk about today, but a little bit less, I think a little bit less honest. And we can talk about that, in her case, we can talk about that study all we want, or that TV show all we want, but we should really talk about the body count. 49-year-old Verity Lynn in Scotland, 31-year-old Tyne Durgen in Munich, and 53-year-old Lonnie Morris.
These are followers of Jazz
Muheen. These are followers of Jazz Muheen who have died trying to follow that diet. And that's the problem when we talk about these skeptical things, is they're funny. Because when people believe in funny things, you know, when we talk about David Icke and the reptilians and how everybody who's in charge of the world are reptilians from another planet, we can laugh about it because it's cute, it's some
crazy
pulp novel. But on the other side of it is you've got the protocols of the Elders of Zion guys, and you have the people who are telling other people to starve to death so they can be more godly.
I don't think there's anything godly about being, you know, completely emaciated and disease ridden. Maybe that's just me. I'm sure there are people out there who disagree.
Now, the case of the Seattle resident, I mean, at least she doesn't appear to be in it. Okay, maybe for attention, but she doesn't seem to be in it for financial gain. So why don't you tell us about the study, Becky?
Yeah, well, I mean, the study, it's, first of all, she does give a big disclaimer to, I guess, indemnify her against any body counts attributed to her, but she does say, this experiment is dangerous. Do not attempt it on your own without proper supervision. We do not recommend that you stop eating food. Many people die if they stop eating food.
All people die if they stop eating food.
And she says, your body, mind, spirit system might need to be so highly in tune with universal forces so that it's able to make such a huge transition on so many levels. So the transition that she's talking about doing, I mean, she's going to be in her house, presumably, under the monitor of 8 cameras. She said her face will always be visible, and it's to basically prevent cheating. She wants to make sure that she's not like the Wiley Brooks or the Jazz Muheen, who presumably do sneak off at some point and eat.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, basically there's that this is quasi-scientific. She understands that this would not meet scientific merits. But the thing is that she says that this would be earth-shattering if she were to be able to prove that she could go 4 months. And she's looking to go 4 months. 4 months with eating.
Is there a break-in point where there's going to be a doctor who says, okay, this experiment has failed, you need to be fed now?
She actually has a thing saying medical intervention is acceptable during the course of this experiment, as long as it does not involve ingesting what could ordinarily be called food.
Okay.
So I don't know what kind of medical intervention you'd need for a starving person.
Are we talking about IV nutrition then? I mean, I wouldn't really consider
it. I think that would be so. Yeah, I think she would call it that too from the way where we're talking. But I guess if she says no food, even in the case of medical intervention.
Yeah.
So we have an experiment where either it succeeds or she dies. And
right.
It's just this one person. What would it take to make this actually scientific?
Boy, first off, we need a larger focus group. You really can't perform science with an N of one. It's just not possible. I would really have to talk to a bioethics committee to figure out just how many subjects are required. But two, these are human beings. Good luck getting past any sort of bioethics community doing a subject like this on humans where all of the available literature says that they will most certainly die.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the situation where you know, she's doing it on herself, so that's one get out with an ethics
right.
committee,
yeah.
is I'm doing it to myself, so
yeah.
there's no victims here.
She, on her website, actually does acknowledge that. She said, oh, well, I would love to be the subject at a university study, but, oh, universities wouldn't do that because so many people have died, but I think I'm able to because I'm spiritually in tune with the universe. I mean, this is a lady that picks up in a van, does hot coal walking, has changed her name 5 different times. She's on her spiritual journey across the world.
I just think that the vicissitudes of civilization, or the lack thereof, have provided adequate evidence that people can't live off light. I mean, we've got famines, mass starvations induced and natural through drought or through siege.
Right.
And it's, you know, it seems like in that's, if we were to look at that as a statistical population, that's bigger than n equals one. That's pretty big.
It's tremendous. I mean, we have, you know, 10,000 years of recorded history saying that if you don't eat food, you'll die. And not just in the human species, not just in our taxa, but in every taxa we have looked at with very few exceptions that are not primary producers, like, you know, photosynthetic organisms.
And if we found one person who managed to live, you know, if we found somebody who figured out, who wasted away and then didn't die because they're living off of light, if they were a religious believer, they'd be sainted, there'd be evidence, there'd be stories about it. Mm-hmm. You'd be hearing about it constantly.
Right.
And instead, it's just this one group of people sort of in the corner.
Well, she actually argues that the people that have died from starvation over the course of history were in a poor psychological state to begin with. They were under tremendous stresses, which would not enable them to access this alternate nutritional resource that we all have embedded within our spirits or something like that.
But it seems like if we're considering everybody who's died in a famine as a statistical population, can she really say that every person there didn't, you know, died under bad psychological circumstances? It seems like in that population, there might be people who figure it out.
And the fact that we do have that body count of the other folks that presumably were doing something spiritual, and they still died.
I'd like to know what makes, I mean, forgive me for making any sort of stereotype or generalization, but how does a white woman from a fairly affluent area like Seattle get more spiritually in tuned than the entire history of the human race?
Well, it does sort of provide this weird thing, is that the only way to effectively live without eating is to not need to live without eating. I mean, that's what she's saying here.
And as a biologist, I would say that is counter to evolutionary theory.
Yeah.
So what do we exactly need? And, you know, why do we need to ingest carbon-based foods in order to survive? I mean, she's saying, I'm not going to ingest carbon-based foods.
Right.
Even let's excuse her little splashes of cream in her coffee and tea, which she apparently doesn't think is food.
Well, that happens.
Lipids, proteins, and carbohydrates aren't really food, right? Everybody knows that.
There are here, you know, in the history of breatharianism, There's a bunch of people who say, you know, I put buttermilk in my tea, or I drink tea and stuff like that. And I remember that one specific story where that happened. And there's a lot of people who say they take, you know, they drink water, or they take in the occasional thing. But it is, to be sure, unless they're drinking a lot of it, not enough to sustain them. So they are going to starve.
Yeah, eventually, over time. Why we need to eat food.
101.
If I can go on a little biology tangent here, there's a process that occurs in the cytoplasm and sort of the goo inside our cells called glycolysis, in which carbohydrates are broken down, and breaking them down yields some ATP, some adenosine triphosphate, which is sort of like the little kinetic motor in our cell that we use to do almost everything. And glycolysis is cool. It doesn't make a whole lot of ATP, but it doesn't require oxygen either. Then from glycolysis, you can go to cellular respiration, which includes the Krebs cycle and the electron transport chain. And when those two are combined, you get 36 ATP out. Unfortunately, it does require oxygen, which sort of makes cells like ours that actually carry out the cellular respiration part a little more prone to mutations and things than anaerobic organisms are. But basically, if you don't take in carbohydrates, if you don't take in proteins, if you don't take in lipids that can be broken down into glucose, into these sugars that get broken to make ATP, if you don't take those things in, you don't make ATP. If you don't make ATP, you can't do anything in your cell. You will die.
So what happens if you can't make ATP from foods that we ingest? I mean, can the body, because we always hear about, well, your body is using its fat stores, or maybe once it has no more fat, then it starts eating away at its own muscle. I mean, do we get ATP from that process?
Yeah, kind of. You do have a store of lipids, but these lipids can actually be broken down into sort of their hydrocarbon molecules, sort of their sort of like fattiness, and also their long chains, which if you've probably heard of long chain fatty acids and things like that. Right. Well, these long chains can actually be broken down into sugars that can then be broken down further via cellular respiration, Krebs cycle, and glycolysis. But the thing is, that's not all that you do. When you start breaking down fats, you're also breaking down muscle. You're breaking down other tissues. And the problem with that, specifically in modern humans that have been exposed to our modern environment, a lot of the fats in our bodies contain fat-soluble toxins. And while they're sitting there in our fats, even in the thin layer of fat under the skin of a relatively skinny person, they're not actually doing anything. They're sitting there being fairly harmless, and most of them will eventually get cycled out without being in high concentrations. However, when you're starving yourself, when you're fasting, you're actually starting to break down what's contained in your fat cells and get it back into your bloodstream.
Yeah.
So not only can you get all the fat-soluble toxins out of your fat and into your body by simply fasting or starving, you can also cause ketosis, which is basically when your liver overproduces ketones and sort of turns your blood slightly more poisonous than normal. That can lead to all kinds of health problems.
But that absorption of material when you're starving, I mean, it's an extensive thing. I remember as a kid, there was an overpopulation in the suburbs of Chicago. There was an overpopulation of deer in some of the forest preserves in Chicago, and they would say they would find pregnant deer, and then they would come back later and they'd find out that because there were not enough food sources available, the deer were reabsorbing the fetus. And I was like, that's straight out of a David Cronenberg film. That's creepy.
Yeah, when you're starving, you will absorb your fat. You will absorb your muscle. You will absorb the minerals in your bones. You will absorb the minerals in your brain and in your nerves. This is why starving to death kills you. If you just stopped at losing fat, hey, that would be, you know, that would be okay. Then you could hit a stasis and maybe, you know, live on light. But that's not how it goes. It's not like you lose fat and then you start losing muscle. No, your body starts cannibalizing itself in every available tissue all at once.
So for Navina Shine and for those who say, oh, well, fasting is a really good way to detoxify, you're saying that actually you're releasing releasing toxins from your body into the other parts of your body where it's more accessible
into your bloodstream, where it becomes systemic.
Wow.
Well, if you're on a diet and exercise regimen and losing weight at a safe and healthy rate, you're never really getting very high concentrations of your toxin into your bloodstream at once. But when you are starving, when you are just living off fat, that is all that's coming into your bloodstream.
Yeah.
And you'll be heavily toxic. And there's even a smell associated. If you talk to people who have worked in hospitals and dealt with emaciated individuals, ask them about the smell of someone who is undergoing ketosis. It's
not pleasant.
Quite horrible.
Yeah. And, you know, not just food, but there's also, like, we're weird mammals in that we don't create our own vitamin C, right?
Right, yeah. We need to get it from other places.
That's really weird. I do appreciate her attempt at an empirical approach. I appreciate that she's she's doing this for informational purposes, but
I appreciate she says it's not really science.
Yeah. And also, please don't die. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We'll be back in a moment.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, Knowledge Night and no cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, or to get involved in the community forums. Dead Stars, now available on Amazon.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So we've got some more info. We won't keep talking about this breatharian thing about this lady in Seattle. She's already starting to have some, there's some cognitive weirdness going on, you were saying?
Well, yeah, she, before even setting up her experiment, she said really kind of funny things that are quite easily debunked and represent some logical fallacies. I mean, she's saying if you could look through the eyes of modern medicine and modern paradigms, living on light doesn't show up in the world. It simply can't be seen. Nobody can understand that a person could live on light. It's a whole new paradigm.
I think there's a valid reason for that assumption.
I'm always suspicious when anybody says the word paradigm. It's one of those words that sets off an alarm in my head. It's just such a buzzword that even if it's appropriate, I'm still skeptical.
Yeah, she says also, if people had the opportunity to see her succeed in this, then every individual on the planet will have sufficient evidence for them to be able to say, yes, this happened. That's all that is needed to change everything on the planet. The science can come later. To know something of such vast importance and not say anything would be a crime against humanity. This living on light can literally save the world.
All right, let me be absolutely nutty here and suggest that maybe she's going to succeed. If that happens, like, if that might require some scientific study. Here's the other side of it.
Sure.
This is why empiricism works, even if your sample size is small. It's not scientific, but sometimes if you get something that makes you go, huh? Then hey, that's a song, isn't it? And then you understand that that's not science, and you follow it up with science. Doesn't that
right.
work?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's sort of how it goes. Every idea sounds crazy to start with, but it's whether it holds up to empirical testing or not that's the issue. While researching this topic, I came across something really interesting. There's actually a marine sea slug that can do something kind of similar. This guy eats algae just like other sea slugs. His name is Alicia chlorotica, if anybody wants to look it up. But for the first couple weeks of his life, he just feeds on algae. And while he's doing this, he sort of sucks the algae out like a straw, the cellular contents, including the chloroplasts, which is what is in plants and algae that allows them to derive energy from sunlight to carry out photosynthesis. So normally these things would just get eaten in other species of sea slugs and other things that eat plants. But he actually takes these chloroplasts and moves them into his cells and uses them, actually derives energy from sunlight. They can live for 10 months on nothing but sunlight with no other nutrition, provided they're still in a stable marine environment. They also have to hijack some of the algae's DNA in order to actually use these chloroplasts.
Well, that's sort of the back to earth from my weird blue skying a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
there are biological structures which allow you to live off of sunlight.
Right.
We don't have them.
No, we don't have them. If you had them, you would be quite green or quite red, as the case may be.
Yeah.
But there was no evidence that she was having any kind of the Odwalla green smoothie for 10 months beforehand or anything. Now, I got one more funny thing that, Dan, I think this will really just tick you off a little bit. It says, this experiment lacks sufficient controls to satisfy scientific methodology. It is designed to satisfy the demands of any normal, intelligent observer.
Okay, that's when she goes off the farm.
I am rendered momentarily speechless. First off, experiment should definitely be in quotation marks.
Yeah.
If you're not operating with controls, if you're operating with an N of one, if you're going in with a predetermined notion that you can do this, you are not doing science.
My expectation coming into this is when somebody's attempting to do the living on light thing. I'm expecting that they're coming at it from a spiritual basis, and they're not going to discount science right out of the gate.
Right.
But here's one where she's saying she realizes this isn't an experiment, but then she goes around and basically says the same thing by, well, this isn't going to be good for scientists, but for normal people, it'll be okay. And that seems like a really kind of junky thing to kill yourself over. Let's be honest, that's what she's doing.
Let me make an analogy here.
This is just this is suicide in front of a camera.
You need a heart transplant, and you're looking for a surgeon. Are you going to find a surgeon that is rigorously trained in modern medicine,
yeah,
or are you going to accept that a surgeon would say, "Well, you know, my methods won't be accepted by other scientists, but they should be good enough for any intelligent person."
Yeah, I think we're pretty much in agreement, though. She's slowly killing herself in front of a camera.
Yeah, it's very sad, and actually every little chuckle I give about it, as strange and funny as the situation seems, I do have to be reminded that somewhere this woman is slowly dying.
Yeah, I mean, we got an email from Scott from Renton. He says, I've been looking at her website. I wonder how she would explain starvation in Africa or North Korea. I suspect she either denies it exists or attributes it to some other unqualifiable phenomenon. Quasi-scientific? Doubt it. How would she explain the existence of digestion systems present in nearly all animals? She should go have her large and small intestines removed, since she has no further need of them. And why keep the teeth?
That's sort of an interesting point. I will say that the subject, Navina, is that her name?
Yes.
Navina, does seem to have a concept that this could fail and medical intervention might be required.
Yeah.
So, anyway, there wouldn't be great to be so committed that you'd throw out your teeth and intestines just yet. But she is still putting her life on the line,
yeah,
teeth or intestines aside.
The guy who goes out in the middle of the night and goes to a junk food store is funny. We can laugh about it.
Sure, yeah.
But the philosophy, he's just not following the philosophy that he says he is, and there's the truth.
Mm.
This, I can't make fun of her. I can't, you know, I mean, I can't, I can laugh about it a little bit, but it's dark humor. It doesn't really sit well with me, because it's not scientific. She kind of denies science, and it's just a slow death, and I don't think she's worth it. I don't think her life is worth proving this point.
I think, you know, we can answer Scott's question, why does she not want to remove these vital organs? Because she's really only planning to have her experiment last 6 months. She claims that the longest someone's been recorded as going without food is 4 months. So she plans to go 4 months and then continue it on another two. And then after that, she says her experiment will be over and she'll have taught the world. And she has no idea whether she'll continue being someone to live off of light. I have my doubts that she'll make it to 4, 5, 6 months, I have my doubts whether she'll make it to, you know, 3 months.
Yeah,
I'd like to say there's at least some value in the data point, but given that we already have billions of data points of what starvation does to a human, I just don't think we need one more data point.
I don't know about you guys, but just talking about this makes me a bit on the hungry side, and if you've ever seen me, I have no problem with being hungry.
I'm a little hungry. I could go for something.
So, well, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about a story about cake, did we not?
We did.
Yeah, I think we did, yeah.
Cake would be nice.
So, can you tell us about this, what you've got here? Because you brought us some new information.
Well, Michael from Renton emailed us saying that considering that there's all this cake bigotry in the news, would an atheist cake meet the same objections as a gay wedding cake? I think this type of guerrilla activism is something your listeners could easily carry out. There's really no downside other than we might end up with some awesome collection of baked goods and an album of cake pictures for Reddit. And so actually, our listeners didn't do this, but one of the Willamette Week actually did this. This is a newspaper in Oregon, and their staffers called up two Oregon bakeries that had actually recently made news for refusing to bake cakes for weddings of lesbian couples. And so, Sam, you have some favorites of their requests that they asked of the cake of the bakeries?
They had four categories of cakes that they asked the bakeries to make. A divorce party. That's not a big deal. Divorce is pretty common in the U.S. Non-kosher barbecue for a Jewish group. Not their religion. a pagan solstice party, which, again, not their religion, but specifically something that religion, their religion, they think, says is bad. And my favorite, stem cell success party. So they asked these questions. So the divorce party, they wrote, "My friend is getting divorced and we'd like to throw her a little party to mark the start of her new life. Do you ever write messages on those? We wanted to say congratulations, and how much would it be for a cake to serve about 8 people?" They asked that to...
Well, there were two cakes. Two cake bakeries. One of them is Fleur Cakes and one of them is Sweet Cakes by Melissa. And these were both the bakeries that had refused to bake cakes for a wedding of lesbian couples, because they say that it is basically against their religious principles.
Yeah, and so Sweet Cake says a 10-inch is $29.99. That should probably do it. We can definitely do something like that. And Fleur says the price for a 10-inch cheesecake is $36 and up, so it'll be between $36 and $45. They have no problem with that. With the stem cell success, the newspaper wrote, "I was wondering if you could do two little cakes. My friend is a researcher at OHSU, and she just got a grant for cloning human stem cells, so I thought I'd get her two identical cakes. Basically, two little clone cakes. How much would they cost?" Sweet Cake writes, "Ha! All right. When are you looking to do it?" And then it goes for a price. Fleur says, they didn't pick up the phone or return the messages. They acknowledged receiving the request, but refused to comment. So one of them may have realized it was a joke, and the other one brings the question, did they understand what they were asking for? I mean, what stem cells are?
That's a tough one. You see so much about stem cells in the news, you know, that, oh, human stem cells, we can't do anything with these. Actually, we can do anything with these. We can't use them in hospitals, but we can use them in research labs. Are they totipotent stem cells, pluripotent stem cells, embryonic stem cells? Have they been induced to become embryonic stem cells or pluripotent stem cells?
Well, that's the science cells? That, what, Mike, you're not Mike.
I'm not Mike.
That's Dan.
Dan, stop it. Okay, we get it. You know science.
All right. I really like the pagan solstice party one. That's the I'm calling to get a quote on a cake for a midsummer solstice party. My coven is celebrating on Friday, June 21st, and the decoration's going to be really simple. Just a green pentagram. We'd like to pick it up sometime that afternoon before the bonfire.
Well, there's for a lot of people in the pagan religions, that's a pretty standard thing they do.
Sure.
For a solstice. That's just, it's kind of what they do. So there's nothing from a religious perspective, horrifyingly weird about it.
No, but presumably for someone that would reject a wedding cake,
exactly,
based on their Christian principles, I don't know that they would want to entertain
but
that.
To go a step further, I do like this non-kosher barbecue, and maybe you could follow up on this, Becky. They wrote, "I'm looking to get a special cake for a barbecue we're having next week. Our cow died of old age, and we're planning to grill some steaks along with lobster and pulled pork sandwiches. What size would we need for 10 people? Okay, so once again, Fleur did not pick up the phone or return messages, but Sweet Cakes went ahead with it. So what's wrong with all of these things?
Okay, so pulled pork sandwiches, pork comes from pigs, and pigs are not considered kosher.
Obvious.
Lobster are not considered kosher either.
Right.
Sea animals have to have true fins and true scales, and land animals have to have certain kinds of hooves and chew their cud and things like that.
Okay,
and
the one that's throwing me off, though, is the cow.
The cow, that's fine. Grilling up some steaks, that's cool.
But it died of old age, is that?
Oh, yeah, right. So you're supposed to actually slaughter a cow in a very certain way. You can't just eat animals that would have died of old age. Yes, thank you for calling me on that one, guys.
Yeah, the old age thing makes it not kosher.
Yeah, because they wouldn't have been slaughtered. It would have died by natural means, and you have to actually slaughter a cow in order for it to be edible. So cow died of old age, pigs and lobsters, all unkosher and all prohibited according to biblical law. So if they're refusing to have some lesbian wedding cakes because the Bible says that lesbians can't eat cake when they get married, then presumably you would not entertain making a festival
over
unkosher animals.
That's what it comes down to, is the only time they had a problem with it is when it was a political hot button topic.
Right.
That's it.
Actually, they're like enthusiastic about the barbecue thing. They're saying that, yeah, well, the apple cake, you know, the apple goes really good with pork and the caramel will complement the lobster, and for a barbecue, this is a really good option.
Yeah.
Caramel covered lobster.
Now they could say that a non-kosher barbecue or a pentagram thing is not their religion, so they don't care. But the stem cell research thing and the divorce thing, I'm beginning to wonder if they said no purely for the purposes of attention, because these two companies have probably gotten more attention than they've ever received, and they're just sort of banking on the fact that conservatives will, you know, socially conservative people will go to them.
Well, I think we did know that notice that in Western in Eastern Washington, the florist that denied being able to do the flowers for a wedding of a gay couple, they were boycotted by some people, but they actually got a whole lot of business from other people that said, yeah, don't do flowers for gay guys, right? And so they actually got more, you know, more business because of that.
I think this should become known as the Chick-fil-A gambit when a business plays this one.
This is just Chick-fil-A, isn't it? All over again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's, you know, okay, for now, they might get, you know, if they live in potentially conservative places, they're going to get more business. But the fact of the matter is the tide has essentially turned on marriage equality. It's getting legal in more places. The Supreme Court is going to be talking about it and people are confident. People, you know, there's a large group of people out there that are going to defeat DOMA. Where are in 50 years from now, or 20 years from now, or 10 years from now, you're going to be that florist. You're going to make a lot of money. You're going to, maybe 5 years from now, you're going to make some money from people you may not like, and then the business will disappear.
Maybe they'll actually grow socially and you know, progress a little bit and change their views. I mean, it's not unheard of for a business to make a public apology for a bad policy in the past.
I don't see one coming, though.
One of the interesting things is that polling data is now showing that not only are an increasing number of people in favor of having marriage equality, but an increasing number of people that don't personally believe in marriage equality think that it's basically its passage and its legalization across the U.S. is pretty much imminent.
Yeah.
And so sort of coming to terms with that fact can be an important step towards really living in a truly pluralistic society where no one group is privileged by someone's religious beliefs.
But once again, this is just a question of religious people, you know, thinking that they can do this to everybody and that there's going to be no consequences. The consequences are coming. We have two very quick emails. We have James from Chandler, Arizona, and he writes, any follow-up to having Edwina Rogers on your show? She seemed to have stopped taking interviews.
We looked into having her on the show about a year ago when she was first named the head lobbyist director of Secular Coalition for America, and she had not responded to our inquiries.
Yeah, so no interview. And yeah, she seems to have stopped doing interviews entirely. The second email we have, Josiah from the internet, is there a right way to be an out atheist? Is there a wrong way, a best way, a worst way? So we just have a couple minutes left. Why don't we, I don't really think so.
I think when we all sort of first come out as atheists, there's sort of a stage of anger where we're you know, still upset about what's been done to our psychology, and maybe we feel, you know, some guilt about what we've done to others in the name of our faith.
Angry atheist phase.
Yeah, the angry atheist phase. And you know, while that's something I think that most of us go through, it's probably the wrong way to go through things.
Yeah, I think what's the wrong way to be an out atheist? Murdering people, screaming that you're an atheist.
Yeah.
I think that's a wrong way to do it. Hurting people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean.
There's ways that can help improve the image of atheists, but again, I mean, for someone that doesn't like to make generalizations about all people, everyone is responsible for their own individual actions. So,
is there a best way to be an atheist? Really?
I don't know.
I would say to just be a good person.
Yeah,
that's the best way to be a person. I don't think that we need an inherent division in atheists and somebody else. There is a best way to be a human being.
Best implies there's a perfection to it, and I'm not one of those people who believes that there's a perfection to being an atheist. It's an incredibly personal journey. It usually starts out, for most people these days, it usually starts out with disillusionment with their religion. It's the same thing that everybody else does to going anywhere.
I think the worst way to be an atheist is to believe in God.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, I think the fact that it is a personal thing, it sort of precludes you from coming up with from the best way. I mean, don't think of it as the best way. Don't think of being the best atheist. I think the best way to be an atheist, the nicest way to be an atheist, is not to consider being the best atheist, but the best you. Figure out what fits with you. Be a moral person. Be a good person. And just take it from there. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me today was Dan Lombardo and Rebecca Friedman. Post show is at Doyle's in an hour. Join us there. You can go to Ask an Atheist at askanatheist.tv or email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. Music by usual is as usual is by Chris Coleman. And I'll see you guys next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station.